How powerful is Cox Internet? Powerful enough to keep fans across the country in the action on the biggest game days of the year. Whether you're one of 65,000 fans at Allegiant Stadium or you're streaming the game at home with America's fastest download speeds powered by fiber. Whenever it matters most, Cox keeps you connected. Cox Internet is connected to the premises via coaxial connection. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms and other restrictions may apply. Analysis by Ookla Speed Test Intelligence Data. Fixed median download speeds. US Q3 2023.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Is your finance team swamped with time-consuming manual processes? Tracking down receipts, coding expenses, managing vendors? Now, you can streamline all your financial processes with Ramp, the all-in-one platform for corporate cards, expense management, accounts payable, procurement, and more. With powerful software that reduces dollars and hours spent, Ramp customers save an average of 5% of their total spend. With Ramp, you can say goodbye to time-consuming manual work, like data entry, submitting expenses, chasing receipts, and much more. Ramp even integrates with your ERP, so you can close your books up to 8 times faster. Customize spend controls and approval workflows to prevent wasteful spending before it happens. Ramp offers real-time reporting and saving insights, so you can make informed financial decisions. See how Ramp can streamline your business processes and give your finance team time back to focus on what matters most. And now, get $250 when you join Ramp. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to the Mind Over Murder podcast.
My name is Bill Thomas. I'm a writer, consulting producer, and now podcaster. I am now trying to use my experience as the brother of a murder victim to help other victims of violent crime. I'm working on a book on the unsolved Colonial Parkway murders, and I'm the co-administrator of the Colonial Parkway Murders Facebook group together with Kristen Dilley.
My name is Kristen Dilley. I'm a writer, a researcher, a teacher, and a victims advocate, as well as the social media manager and co-administrator for the Colonial Parkway Murders Facebook page with my partner in crime, Bill Thomas. Welcome to Mind Over Murder. I'm Kristen Dilley.
And I'm Bill Thomas.
And we're joined again today by profilers Jim Fitzgerald and Dr. Ray Carr, here to answer some listener questions about profiling and the Colonial Parkway murders. Fitz and Ray, thanks for joining us again. So one of the biggest questions that everybody seems to be asking right at the moment is whether or not Wilmer had an accomplice. And Fitz, you said that it tends to be very rare for, I really like your term apex predator, so I'm going to use that for a little bit. You said it's pretty rare for an apex predator to have an accomplice. However, and this is a listener question, by the way, from our listener, David, who asks us many questions many times during the day. He would ask me.
Hi, David.
Hi, David.
Check us out on Cold Red. We'll answer your questions, too.
Hey, Dave. David wants to know, hypothetically, if there was an accomplice in these cases, how would their behavior have changed during all these years? Would accomplice behavior have changed since the death of Alan Wade Wilmer Sr.?
It's a big hypothetical.
It really is. Look, if you want an answer to a question like that, and Jim, you might remember this case. It was from up in Toronto. The Bernardo Colca, I think her name was Colca. It was a husband and wife team.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. And look at the behavior. Has it changed with her? He actually used her to come in and get involved in that. And the first victim was actually her sister. And then he would use her to groom others to do that. But to give David a fair response to that question, it's rather difficult to be able to pinpoint how someone's behavior would change hypothetically, because there's too many factors that would be present or not present that would have an effect on that behavior, to me.
And what I would always say is, if the evidence shows that there's more than one offender to a crime, then you go with it. Otherwise, you go with the percentages and assume it's not. It's only one person. But then if you would say then, as profilers writing a report, you'd word it in a certain way. If there was a second offender, that would be the beta male. The alpha male in this case will be Wilmer, because we obviously know he's done other murders. I guess we don't know for a fact he's done them on his own, but there's no evidence pointing otherwise. Certainly with this architect woman and her boyfriend back in the day, there was only one person at the scene of the car. And I'm sure there's other information coming out with just indicating a lone offender. But invariably, when there are more than one offender, it's an alpha male and a beta male, and there's one in charge, and maybe a woman, it's very rare, but yeah, there is that Canadian case. In fact, we're going to have Greg McCrary on Cold Red in a few weeks. He played a big role in that case, helping the Canadian authorities put the profile together. And so it's the rarest of the rare, but every once in a while you'll find someone bringing in a partner or a colleague of some sort. But I don't see it in this case. And until evidence goes otherwise, I think we can rest assured that Wilmer was a lone wolf, as they like to say.
Here's another one from Carla. Carla asks, haven't I heard on an episode of Criminal Minds that a sociopath can pass a polygraph?
Depends who the polygrapher is.
Okay.
Some polygraphers are not very good and others are very good. I don't know that to be true. And I think if you'd asked any polygrapher, they would tell you it's not.
Yeah, and the best part of a polygraph is the pre-test interview and the post-test interview. And we don't have to get into the weeds on that. Neither of us is a polygrapher here. I don't think you are, Ray, unless you kept it.
No, I'm not.
I lie to you.
There are some things I hide from you, but that's not one of them.
Because I lie to you all the time and you don't pick up on it.
Kidding.
Can you tell these two guys have been friends for years and they're working together?
That's terrible. Anyway. Those listeners, that's terrible, Jim.
Anyway, I feel like a wife. I was just lying now.
I feel like a wife.
Oh, we're not going to go there. We're not going to go there.
It's a very close
David
working relationship.
Or Carla or anyone else who may be listening. But just to wrap up the polygraph part, yeah, people can beat it. I'm convinced. I've watched people take polygraphs live with a camera or a one-way mirror, and I'm convinced that the guy is lying, but somehow the needles are just not gyrating the way they should, and the operator has to officially say they passed. It can be compromised. Psychopaths and sociopaths are so good at lying that they can actually believe what they're saying, mm-hmm. even if one part of their brain knows it's a lie. And
that's
that can throw off your autonomic responses, your physiological responses, I should say, don't react how it would to one of us telling a lie, a quote-unquote normal person telling a lie. So I'm glad the person is quoting Criminal Mind, because I was the tech advisor on that show for a number of years. And I'm not sure that was one of my episodes or not, but for the writer's sake, I will say, yeah, every once in a while, a psychopath high on that scale, he probably could pass a polygraph if it was only an average polygrapher or less.
One of the reasons that we asked is that it has come out that Alan Wade Wilmer Sr. was polygraphed in this examination. He did pass that polygraph. And as a result of that pass, he was allowed to continue on with his life. And as a result of that, Teresa Howell was murdered in 1989 after he passed that polygraph and was taken off the FBI's radar. So that's why we're asking about polygraphs.
We know that to be true.
That is factually
accurate.
That is
accurate. True, yeah.
He was given a polygraph by a gentleman, I'll leave his name out of this conversation, who was considered one of the top polygraphers at the FBI. He did all the spy cases. There were a lot of high-profile spy cases broken, particularly in Norfolk, Virginia, with the Navy, military, CIA, et cetera, all being there. There were a number of big busts of spies, and this guy did those cases. I actually think there may have been too much deference given to this particular polygraph examiner. I think they might have actually put too much weight into what he said. The SAC, Irv Wells, the special agent in charge of that Norfolk office, who passed away a couple of years ago, and he spoke to me about this story directly, and my father told me this same story in 1988 when it happened, because my dad was in constant contact with the investigators in Kathy and Becky's murder, and then as the Colonial Parkway murders continued, they spoke to my dad regularly. The polygraph story did happen, and they did let Wilmer go, and they had Wilmer and a second man, unnamed to us, both given polygraph exams, and they were both permitted to go on their way. And Alan Wade Wilmer Sr. went right back to killing people. He killed, confirmed now, Teresa Howell the next year. Yeah. He would have been polygraphed in mid-1988, and by June 1989, he's back to murdering people.
Now you know why polygraph is not admissible in courts as evidence. You can get false positives, you can get false negatives. And it's a great tool if used right. And I don't know everything that you say here. I'm not denying your version of the story, Bill. I'm sure that's what it is. But let me ask you this. You mentioned that two guys were polygraphed.
Correct.
Was there any alleged linkage between Wilmer and this other person?
We're not sure who the second person was. Sometimes they've mentioned his brother as a potential suspect, although he's not been arrested or anything like that. He's not been named, but that suspicion exists. Could have been his brother. That is not specified in the versions of the story that we've been told. Irv Wells, who confirmed the story that my father had told me back in 1988, he quoted himself and said there was a lot of concern because they thought they'd identified the Colonial Parkway killer, as they called him. And then they were really disappointed, obviously, with the polygraph test results. Wells said to the examiner, "You better effing be right," because they were rock solid and some very highly regarded and experienced case agents, including people that my father knew, and we certainly knew their names at my family's dining room table, because my father would say, "I spoke to Agent Owens today," in his beautiful voice. And my dad and I had an agreement. Whenever he spoke to the FBI, he would call me, or we'd find a quiet corner of the house so as to not upset my mother, and he would tell me what the agents had told him in the latest conversation. One of the things that we're struggling with is the fact that so many highly respected case agents who worked this case for years were certain they had the right guy, and then they got overturned or outvoted, or I don't know how it works, but they put these guys aside. And actually, those agents were right. Wilmer was the guy.
I'm taken back a little bit that the FBI was the lead agency in this, because to the best of my knowledge, capital murder was not something the FBI was involved in. And I have to ask the other question, Bill, is what information was available to the police and the agents that led them to polygraph Wilmer in the first place? Well, and why would you walk away if you had information that was solid enough to get you to a point to polygraph someone? Why would you let one polygraph be the difference? Because we knew, and I knew, and as Jim had mentioned, although a polygraph wasn't admissible, it was just an investigative tool. And just because it came up negative didn't mean that what we had, what we also had evidentiary wise, wasn't tied to this individual. So I have to ask, what else was tied that allowed them to even put him on the radar?
I'll try to do the compact version of this. When Keith Call and Cassandra Haley went missing on the Colonial Parkway, the FBI did a full court press. They already had two double homicides that had already taken place. Kathy Thomas and Rebecca Dowski had been murdered a year and a half prior on the Colonial Parkway. And then the second couple, Robin Edwards and David Knobling, had been killed about a half hour away at the Ragged Island Wildlife Refuge, which was a Virginia State Police case because it was outside the national park. So FBI is the lead on Thomas Dowski. Now we have a third couple who've gone missing, Call Haley, and now we're back on the Colonial Parkway. So the FBI takes the lead. At that time, then, they realized they had a very serious problem. They've got two double homicides, and now they have a couple missing. And the car is found abandoned on one of these little half-moon pull-offs on the Colonial Parkway next to the York River in a very similar situation to the way my sister Kathy's car was found. And it's only like a mile and a half away and about 18 months prior. So they are really throwing a full-court press at this thing. They book a hotel. They book an entire hotel. It's filled with FBI agents and staff. They are working this case hard. Of course, it's pre-internet, pre-cell phone. So they use radios a lot. They develop intelligence that they are a number of people that were on the Colonial Parkway, couples, described a very unique vehicle that was seen on the Colonial Parkway cruising from one of these half-moon pull-offs to the next one, to the next one. Very peculiar behavior. And they got very good descriptions of this very distinctive, one-of-a-kind pickup truck. And so they're looking for that pickup truck. The guy that was responsible for the maintenance of the radios actually heard all of the chatter with the FBI agents getting their assignments, developing leads, and that sort of thing, heard the description of the truck. He then radios in a day or two later and says, "Guys, I'm on the highway and I'm next to the truck you're looking for." This very distinctive blue-green truck, faded writing on the doors with a big elaborate rig on the back, which to my eye would look like a tow truck, but is really the tongs and winches that you use to pull crab pots and oyster traps out of the water. So this truck is very distinctive and they've got good descriptions. The radio operator calls in and says, I'm next to this guy on the highway. He describes the truck. They say, that's the one we're looking for. He said, it's got unusual plates on it too. It had vanity plates, E-M Raw, Edom Raw, which of course is an off-color expression as well as an oystering joke. So now they have a plate. And a couple days later, so now we're into 4 days after Keith Call and Cassandra Haley have gone missing on the Colonial Parkway, two FBI agents roll up on this guy in his driveway up in Lancaster, Virginia, on the northern neck of Virginia up on the Rappahannock River. The two agents are immediately suspicious because this guy is in his dirt driveway using solvent and water to clean out his truck and repainting some of the interior of the truck as well as the bed of the truck. And this is a beater work truck. This isn't some fancy rig. They regard this as very suspicious behavior. They ask the man questions. They go back to their command center and discuss it with the team. They get a search warrant. They go back to the guy's house, which he shares with his brother. A small house, it's been described as a trailer or a small house, modest place, but compact. They have a search warrant. They find the things they're looking for, which include guns, handcuffs, and handcuffs could be important because they believe handcuffs were used in Kathy and Becky's murder a year and a half prior, and an extensive collection of pornography. So at this point, this guy's checking a lot of boxes, and they've been looking for Waterman since 86 when Kathy and Becky were murdered because of the use of rope, knives, and diesel fuel in that murder, not to mention handcuffs. After they serve the search warrant, they are thinking, and Irv Wells tells us this, it's also in the book on the Colonial Parkway by Blaine Pardo and his daughter Victoria Hester, A Special Kind of Evil. This whole story is described. So they are absolutely convinced they found the Colonial Parkway killer. They bring him in for the polygraph examination that we talked about. And in the story, they say they, but they don't specify who they are. But we know one of them is Alan Wade Wilmer Sr. We're not sure who the second man is. But the polygraph examiner says they didn't do it and they don't know anything about it. And that's when the SAC, Irv Wells, responds, you better effing be right, because they were so certain it was the right guy. We're hearing rumors from inside the investigation now there may have been a second polygraph examination and the results were inconclusive. We don't know that for a fact. But regardless, as we understand it, they let these guys walk. What I'm struggling with as the brother of a murder victim is, how in the world did the two investigators who've been handling this case for the last 15 years, we had one guy handling the case for 5 years, and another agent's been handling the case for a decade, and they were supposed to review all of the case materials over this 15-year period. I understand that DNA and other forensic options were not available to us in 88, but they sure are available to us now. And somehow there was a disconnect, it appears, between the case agents from back in the 80s and the case agents now. You're listening to Mind Over Murder. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsors.
How powerful is Cox Internet? Powerful enough to keep fans across the country in the action on the biggest game days of the year. Whether you're one of 65,000 fans at Allegiant Stadium, or you're streaming the game at home with America's fastest download speeds powered by fiber. Whenever it matters most, Cox keeps you connected. Cox Internet is connected to the premises via coaxial connection. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms and other restrictions may apply. Analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data. Fixed median download speeds. US Q3 2023.
Are you a small business owner? Do you try to make the most of every minute and dollar so you can grow your business faster? Then look to Ramp, a corporate card with built-in expense management software. Ramp is designed to save your business money, not spend it. Ramp will automatically track and classify every transaction you make. Ramp will even proactively block spending that's out of policy so you don't waste a penny. Plus, Ramp will surface personalized savings insights so you know you're getting the best possible price. With Ramp, you'll also be saving time. Ramp customers save hours every month by automating routine tasks like data entry, receipt collection, transaction categorization, and much more. Go from closing your books in days to just a few hours. Put the most powerful tool to work for your growing business today, Ramp. And now, get $250 when you join Ramp. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Currents issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's corporate cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp's software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Currents issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
We're back here at Mind Over Murder. Now, as I understand it from our current case agent, in 2020, I believe it is, fall 2020, they had a meeting and she briefed three longtime case agents, now retired, on the status of the case. And after a 2+ hour briefing, one of the three agents who was there, I knew two of their names from my father. One of the three of them says, "That's all well and good, but I still like my guy." Our current agent responds, "Who's your guy?" And he says, "Alan Wade Wilmer Sr. He's a waterman up on the Northern Neck." He also said, "It may be a moot point because he died a couple of years ago." This is 2020, and Wilmer had died in December 2017. Here it is all these years later, and he says, "That's all well and good, but I still like my guy, Alan Wade Wilmer Sr." One of those heartbreaking situations where I feel like the agents were so close, and then a polygraph examination seemed to push aside all the other evidence they had.
Here's the thing, Bill. I find that very interesting. Before the polygraph, there's a search warrant. And the bar in the federal system, in order to get a search warrant, I'm over my career, probably was the affiant in anywhere between 75 and 100 search warrants. The amount of information that needs to be there in order to get into someone's home to search it is pretty extensive.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking that there's quite a bit of information that this agent had that he felt very comfortable with, no matter what. Because look at it this way. How many times, and Jim can attest to this, how many times have we locked somebody up after we've searched their place and said, "Hey, did you do this?" Doesn't matter what the crime is. And they say, "I don't know anything about it." Yet we know, based upon the evidence, that this guy is the guy that did this.
Right.
Based upon all the other evidence. So I find it hard to believe that just because he passed a polygraph that they said, "Hey, the heck with this, is not him." I find that hard to swallow, because I know that in the cases that I worked, in the cases that I supervised with other people, that would never, ever happen. We would never dismiss something like that when there was other pointers that were looking at this case. If that happened, I'm very disappointed. If that happened, I'm extremely disappointed, because that should have never happened. Not with our agency, not with any agency for that matter. That should have never happened.
Couldn't say it better than Ray.
We find ourselves baffled. We can only tell you what we've been told. This so-called driveway story, as I refer to it, because of the two agents going up and meeting with this man and questioning him, and then the search warrant and the polygraph. This has come to us from multiple sources, including the SAC, who was in charge of the Kathy Thomas, Rebecca Dowski investigation, as well as the disappearance of Keith Call and Cassandra Haley a year and a half later. And he said to me, this is Irv Wells now, that the failure to solve the Colonial Parkway murders was the biggest disappointment. And I could tell it was a profound disappointment in a pretty stellar 30-year career with the FBI. Agent Wells passed away 2 years ago now, 2022, if I'm not mistaken. I had 3 to 4 hours with him on two different occasions when we were filming our Lover's Lane Murders television series. He and I spent hours together, and I didn't have to set up cameras and lights and all that stuff, so we had a lot of time to talk. And he told me this story again. I definitely get what you're saying, Ray, but that's what we're told happened. Somehow there was a disconnect that those case agents in the early stages, who were really good, very well-respected case agents, somehow that information wasn't passed forward somehow. Our current case agent said she didn't know about Wilmer until 2020, and he'd already been dead for 3 years by that point. It's a very frustrating and baffling situation.
How do you read? Tells me she didn't read the case file. Because if you go back and read the case file, how can you not know the guy's name?
I think she knew his name, but didn't realize how much attention should be paid to him. I don't know. The polygraphic results should have been in there, or some reference to it would be in the case file too, would it not?
Yeah, I look, nothing against any other agency out there, but the FBI, when we do something, there's nobody better at doing it than we are. Not to say that we can't drop the ball from time to time, that happens. But in something like this, where there's multiple victims, there's multiple agencies, it pains me to say that not one person from any other agency said anything or had any input into this. Something's not right here. I would love to hear from the case agent who said, hey, he said 20 years later, after this guy's dead, he said, I still like my guy, Wilmer Sr. I still like him. 30 years later, I still like him. He's making that statement. What I would love to hear his explanation about what happened. First, I'm trying to understand, and I guess I understand that the case, the jurisdiction of the case came into the venue because of the fact that it was a national park.
Correct.
Which was federal land.
Yeah.
And that's what gave the FBI thing. And actually, you have federal park rangers that usually handle those things, but they're not equipped. And nor is the FBI does not investigate homicides, but that doesn't mean that they're not capable of doing so. They're very capable. And because a lot of FBI agents are former police officers.
Right. Many of the agents, I know, I don't know if you're also a police officer previously, but many FBI agents I've met, like Jim, are former cops themselves.
Before we let you guys go, we're going to ask you to just do one little bit of speculation, just one more thing. Is there any reason that you could think of why a serial killer's DNA might not be uploaded to the CODIS system?
Well, he's never been charged with a crime, certainly a felony crime, or even one involving a sexual offense or a violent offense. That's my understanding, and there are, as great as DNA is, and part of me is saying we should have everyone's DNA in these databases, there are certainly civil libertarians and others saying that's not necessarily the case. It's a violation of our rights. You forego some of those rights when you're arrested for a violent crime and a sexual crime of some sort. And the laws vary from state to state. If Wilmer had no other violent offenses under his belt,
he did not.
Back in the 80s, he wouldn't have been voluntarily asked to provide a saliva swab because the DNA analysis, forensic DNA analysis, wasn't around then. There was no reason for that then. There's really no excuse nowadays if someone has one of those charges against them to either solve future crimes or to solve, of course, past crimes, not to mention the one being investigated in real time. There's really no excuse for that now, but unless it's voluntary, I am of the school. My mind has changed a bit over the years without getting into some of the issues in our country today, but if you're not accused of a crime, you shouldn't necessarily have to either have stuff been taken from your body or, for that matter, stuck into your body. And I think that's so I understand that part of why Wilmer's DNA was not in any sort of CODIS-like database.
Just to add to what Jim said, back in the mid-80s, there was no DNA. So there was no CODIS. There was no purpose or reason to take a DNA sample because it didn't exist. To the best of my recollection, I'm going to say 2010, 2009, we start being mandated that anybody that's arrested, we were starting to take swabs. And Jim was already gone from the Bureau. So even when Jim was in the Bureau before he left in 2007, we weren't taking swabs in. It didn't happen until, I think, 2009, 2010, at the end of my tenure, when I was getting ready to leave, that they started doing that. CODIS existed then, but it was only some people where they were forced to by search warrant. In order to take someone's DNA, I had to obtain a search warrant in order to get that DNA, in order to get hair samples. It wasn't readily done Then it became a condition, if you're arrested, not only are you going to provide fingerprints, you're also going to provide a swab. And we would do a cheek swab and send that down, and that would be entered into CODIS. So that's probably the reason, because 2010, this individual's in his mid-50s, late-50s. Mm-hmm. At that point, his probably career as a criminal either really subsided or was almost over.
One thing I'm thinking about, and I'm not throwing anybody under the bus, and I've had plenty of criticisms of the FBI and the Virginia State Police over the years and quite intensively over the past few weeks, because I don't think they were straightforward at all in this recent press conference where they announced the identification of this offender. But putting that aside for a second, I do think that all of us have to work together to find a workaround. In a situation like this, I think an offender like Wilmer's DNA, post-mortem, and the man's dead. He's a confirmed serial killer. He's killed at least three people in two separate incidents, so he meets the FBI criteria, as we understand it, for what is a serial killer. I think in a situation like this, we have to figure out legally a way that we can put offenders like this into CODIS, because I think it would help us solve a lot of unsolved cases and provide answers for a lot of families like mine that are looking for answers. I'm not trying to stomp all over anybody's rights, but I feel like a lot of your rights die with you. And I agree. Think we have to find a way. We've heard about other offenders like this that are known serial killers, but were not actually charged with a crime prior to their deaths. I think post-mortem, we should find a way to put those offenders into CODIS.
I don't have a legal background here, so I don't know what the legality of that is, but I would concur that once you're passed, and if you're found to be guilty of something after you're gone, that I think is perfectly acceptable ethically to submit that to a database to check it against other DNA samples of unsolved crimes. I don't know what the legality of that is, but from an ethical standpoint, I think it's perfectly acceptable to me. Jim?
I guess the rights of a dead person can be violated, can be constitutionally stepped on, violated, but I think if there's some sort of reasonable suspicion of some sort of violent activity on that person's part, and we certainly have it here, that his DNA should be no ands, if, or buts put into CODIS and searched against any other act of murder and sex crime across the nation. To me, there's no ands, if, or buts about that. So hopefully someone down the line, I'm not sure if his estate or his family has an attorney presenting the deceased, Mr. Wilmer. He's not going to be defamed. I guess you can defame a dead person. We'll have our lawyers tell us about that. But
I'd be happy to defame him. I won't tonight, but I might in the near future.
But no one's, if it's not a match, it's not a match.
No, and I would never defame.
If it is a match,
the man,
that's not defamation.
Right.
That's the science linking up a crime scene to a specific offender. And that's not, defamation only has to be untrue.
No, I'm only sticking with the true part. they figure out if Alan Wade Wilmer Sr. is responsible for the murder of Kathy Thomas and Rebecca Dowski, I probably won't cotton much to saying great things about him. At the same time, we know for certain he's linked via DNA to the murder of three people and circumstantially to the disappearance of Keith Call and Cassandra Haley. I am hoping and praying that there will be further cases in the Colonial Parkway murders and elsewhere that will be linked to this man, because I feel like there's a lot of families out there waiting for answers. We can provide answers if the FBI and Virginia State Police can put a case together against this man, even though he is deceased.
I would say, in all fairness, this has just come to light in the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
And I think we need to, I think everybody needs to give the FBI and the Virginia State Police the opportunity to do their job and not prejudge them before they're able to do what they do. Having worked with both of them, they're both outstanding. Work for one, work with the other. They're both outstanding institutions. And I would say, give them the opportunity to do their job. And if they don't do their job, then smack them around a little bit. But I think once you give them that opportunity, I think they're going to do it.
That's good advice, Ray, and I appreciate it. And you probably also talked me off a cliff.
Yeah, actually, honestly, Ray, I think you just did. This is good. Gentlemen, I feel like I just got to take a profiling masterclass. thank you so much for joining us today and going through everything. We have a ton more, of course, but we don't want to keep you any longer. Thank you so very much. We really appreciate you taking the time.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Check us out on Cold Red, folks.
Absolutely.
Where we just came from.
That is going to do it for this episode of Mind Over Murder. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Mind Over Murder is a production of Absolute Zero and Another Dog Productions.
Our executive producers are Bill Thomas and Kristen Dilley.
Our logo art is by Pamela Arnois.
Our theme music is by Kevin MacLeod.
Mind Over Murder is distributed in partnership with Crawl Space Media.
You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.
You can also follow our page on the Colonial Parkway Murders on Facebook.
And finally, you can follow Bill Thomas on Twitter at BillThomas56.
Thank you for listening to Mind Over Murder.
Dear all-wheel drive, it's Toyota. In weather like this, we're sticky like that. Toyota offers 22 vehicles with all-wheel drive and four-wheel drive available and standard. Yep, these rides are traction-packed with more grip and less slip. Snowy roads? I gotcha. Slick surfaces? I gotcha. Frosty turns, windy trails, slithery S-curves? I gotcha, gotcha, gotcha. Find us on Toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.
Dear Power Hungry, order up a full-sized Tundra and make a meal out of a mountain with its electrifying 437 horsepower. Devour the untamed in the 4Runner. Wolf down trails in the all-new 2024 Tacoma, which doles out generous helpings of power and torque. Both trucks come in hybrid avatars, so you can satisfy your pangs while sipping on fuel. Find them on Toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.
Dear Catalyst, Toyota's driving change. With 16 hybrid, plug-in, fuel cell electric, and battery electric vehicles.
Dear Truckin' Awesome, even the Toyota Tundra and the all-new 2024 Tacoma offer hybrid choices.
Dear Eco-Friendly, use your power to choose with Toyota's sleek hybrid sedans.
Dear Freedom, drive more miles and save more dollars with Toyota hybrid SUVs. Get to Toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.